Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harris. Brought to you by Poker Stars and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to know.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Coming up on the show today, another member of this year's World Series of Poker main event, November 9, the chip leader, the man with more than 65 million chips. His name is Jonathan Duhamel, and he will join us later on this hour. Also, tournament director extraordinaire and the new executive director of the World Poker Tour, Matt Savage, who wants to respond to an issue we brought up on last week's show. All of that coming up in the next hour here on The Final Table. Hello, I am Paul Harris, sitting aside Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips, who decided to come back to St. Louis to do his laundry.
Come on, get it out.
Get his suitcase refilled for big trips he's about to take off to Argentina and London. Welcome back to town.
Actually, I just got in less than an hour ago back into town.
Yeah.
So I was out at Foxwoods, did some traveling around for some other items concerning like the PPA, and then back here to St. Louis, and I had to make it here tonight, though. I have an appointment at 6:45 tonight.
Really? Where?
At home base in the Cardinal Stadium. I am not throwing out a pitch,
okay,
by the way. Before anybody else goes there, enough jokes said, guys.
I said, so you're not going back to Busch Stadium to try to redeem yourself from the ground ball you threw to the catcher a couple of years ago, are you?
No. But I'm still telling you, I tell everybody I split the plate. It rolled right across it. I
mean, yes, it did.
Come on, guys.
Yeah, on the 11th bounce. Yeah, anyway.
No, it wasn't even bouncing by then. It was rolling.
So what are you doing tonight?
Actually, during the World Series, Poker Stars held a tournament out there, a charity tournament, with the NHL. And I got to play against a number of different former NHL players, some current ones, a couple of different stars like Kevin Sorbo was there. And I
See, that'd be TV's Hercules.
There you go.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And actually, Rudy was there also. Also played Sam for The Hobbit.
Oh, Sean Astin.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So it was fun. We had a blast. I actually came in fourth on it.
All right. So what does that have to do with Busch Stadium?
Well, I was playing for Albert's Foundation, and I got a nice little check, and I'm going down there tonight to present it to him.
Fantastic.
I tell you what, he and Dee Dee do a great job. The work they do there for the kids and for his homeland is just awesome, and most people don't even realize it.
We have talked quite a bit because of the work you've been doing for the Albert Pujols Family Foundation about the work that he and his wife do for people both here in St. Louis and back home in the Dominican Republic.
Correct.
And
anything I can do there to help him out and get a little publicity for it, because he won't toot his own horn.
Mm-hmm.
The guy does great work off the field. Most people don't even realize that.
Right.
And what we need to do is to make sure that people realize that he is the humanitarian that he is, and he and his wife work so hard and so tirelessly for it.
Well, he does great work on the field as well.
Well,
if only the Cardinals had some other guys who could do the same thing with their bats that he does.
They're seven games out now. Ouch.
Yeah.
But anyhow, but I do get to go down there. I get to talk to Albert again, present him with a check. It's going to be an awesome night, and I get to watch a good game with the Cubs.
All right, terrific. We have a lot of news to get to, but the first thing we want to do on the show is talk about something that we brought up on last week's show, having to do with some controversy about Deep Stacks poker tournament structures. And after this show became a podcast and I posted it online and you and I both tweeted about it on our Twitter accounts, Matt Savage commented on it and retweeted it to some of his followers on Twitter as well, because I guess he liked hearing the topic brought up. If you don't know Matt, he's been a guest on the show before. He is the new executive director of the World Poker Tour. He's the tournament director for the Commerce Casino, which has a big tournament series going on right now, and also for Bay 101 up in San Jose and the Hard Rock Cafe in Las Vegas, where he did their detox series this summer. And he's joining us right here at the top of the show. Matt, welcome back to The Final Table.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's going great. So, as you know, last week on the show, we talked about how some tournament players are starting to get a little bit upset about the fact that lower buy-in tournaments, the 340, the $550 events that used to take place in 9 or 10 hours and get done in one day now are rolling over to a second day. 14 hours of play the first day until 2 o'clock in the morning, and you still have to come back the second day to play for not just the final table,
that's
but much more than that.
Some of them at the Venetian, I think they still had 80 people coming back for the second day on a $300 tournament.
So tell us what your perspective is on this as a tournament director and a guy who decides on tournament structures.
Well, I mean, I can tell you this. I can tell you that, you know, the series I'm running right now, it's a series of $200 and $300 events. And, you know, we've always tried to do something different here. You know, I don't start them with a ton of chips, but I give them a lot of play deep and in the middle of the tournament where I think it matters most. And I continue to do that. But even to the point of now where there's all two-day events with over 100 players, players are saying, you know what, we want to get these done in one day. So, you know, burning out our staff and having them go until 4 or 5 in the morning is something I don't really want to do. So, you know, players have even requested many times of removing levels, shortening the levels, something that was unheard of, like as little as 6 months ago. So I think that some of the players are coming to the realization that the deep stack tournaments aren't all they're cracked up to be.
Well, has the pendulum basically swung too far the other way? It seemed like beforehand it turned into a shove fest a lot of times when you're playing too short of rounds or too short of a stack. There's always been complaints with the WSOP on some of them that you didn't have enough chips to really play poker with. Now it looks like they've swung it the other way and everybody's starting out with 12 or 15,000 in chips. Is there a happy medium?
Yeah, I think there's a happy medium for sure. I mean, I just think that, you know, in the long run, people will start to learn that, you know, again, starting off with a ton of chips may give you a lot of play at the beginning, but it doesn't give you the play where, again, I think it matters the most, the middle and towards the end of the tournament. So, you know, another thing that that does, it was even brought up in that article, is that because you have all those chips, you have to staff more on the front end, you have to have more dealers on the front end, and that's going to increase the fees for the players out there. And, I'm trying to resist against doing that. I do think that it's definitely spun the wrong way with players that call me up all the time. Their first question is not how is the structure, how long is the levels. Their first question is how many chips do I get? And to be honest, that means nothing. It really means nothing to the structure.
Yeah, you know, here at Harris St. Louis, they now have their tournaments with bigger chip stacks. You buy in and you might get 20,000 in chips, but the blinds are going to start at 1 and 200, not at 25-25 or 25-50. So they still play out at a reasonable pace, and you're not going to be there all day, all night, and into the next day.
We actually got into a discussion with some of the other poker players, and they were saying, well, why don't they lean heavily toward the Andes? Maybe start out with Andes on even level 1 or level 2 and increase the Andes more aggressively.
Yeah, I'm hearing more and more of that, and I have some requests out there for something that they do on Stars, which is the ante-up tournaments. And, you know, I've heard more and more people asking why we don't do something like that. So, you know, I'm always out there in the front trying to do different things to make it better for the players and make it more interesting and keep it new and fresh. So that's something we might try.
Well, I think that's the bottom line. We're trying to make the tournaments best for the players. And if we've gone too far in the deep stacks, then maybe we pull it back in. Maybe we come up with Andy's. Maybe we come up with some solution we haven't even talked about
yet. When you talk about the players, there's a wide variety of people there. And some people who never make it to a final table or go really deep in a tournament, you know, they buy in. And if they can get 3 or 4 or 5 hours play out of their $200 or $300 buy-in, you know, they may end up in the middle of the pack, but they feel like, wow, at least I got to play for 5 hours as opposed to going out in 90 minutes or 2 hours, Matt.
Yeah, that's a consideration that, you know, we always consider, too, is because it's just one of those things that, you know, players want value for their money, but, you know, are they really getting it if they're just getting the play in the beginning? And, you know, like you say, all the players, the masses, get to play all of those levels in the beginning and have all those chips, so they think it's great. But the ones that make it deeper and the ones that make the final tables, and we do know that poker is a game of skill, you know, they notice it and they say, you know, why do we have... we look around, and the average chips is 10 big blinds, you know. Whereas in my tournaments, I try and get it to where it goes up towards the end, you know, by adding more time and adding more levels later in the tournament.
By adding more time, you mean the beginning rounds might be 20 or 30 minutes, but by the time you get down to the last 3-4 tables, you might be at 40, 50, or 60-minute rounds?
What I do here is I start with 40s, and then I go to hours at the final table. But, you know, in the World Series in 2002, 3, and 4, we were chip for chip, dollar for dollar, and the players loved the structures. What I did then was I had hour-long levels to start, 75 minutes in the money, and 90 at the final table. And it really created a lot of play deeper where I thought it mattered.
Okay. Another one, one of the other tournaments style, I guess, that Heartland does, and I don't know that I agree with it or not, but they play down to a final table, and then they back up the blinds a level or two to give them more play when they reach the final table. In other words, the blinds might be, I have no idea, 2,000, 4,000 to like play down to the final table. You sit down to the final table, and they go back to 500 and 1,000.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that, only because I think if you provide a good structure and put the right amount of levels in the tournament, then you don't need to do that. And I think that, you know, by doing that, you're basically saying that your tournament structure is flawed to get to that point. And I never liked that. I never liked the fact that you could change the structure later in the tournament. I'd rather just set something up and then have the players know exactly what they're playing. Some people feel that that's not even fair if they have a big stack, and now they make to the final table, and then they revert back to a lower level. It's not really fair for those guys. That's, you know, some of the opinion that I hear.
You know who likes that? The short stacks.
Yeah, exactly.
I only had 8 big blinds. Now I have 24. Okay.
Very similar to people always asking me to add more time when we're on the bubble or, you know, pay an extra spot. Players don't realize there's a lot of strategy in bubble play, you know, by having a big stack.
Yeah. So, Matt, you're one of the leaders and one of the people who thinks about this sort of stuff and makes changes that eventually filter out to the rest of the industry. But as one of the founders of the TDA, the Tournament Directors Association, how do you get the word out to everybody so that the people running the tournaments here at Harrah's St. Louis or the people running them in Atlantic City or in Vegas or anywhere else see this and say, you know what, that's a good structure, that's where the industry should be moving?
Well, I wrote an article about it, you know, about a year ago about deep stacks and are they really the best for the players, and, you know, keep bounding that drum on the forums and, you know, the tournaments that I run out here at Commerce, Bay 101 seem to be all, you know, the same thing. Like Bay 101, we have hour-long levels and we go up to two-hour levels on day number three in the tournament. So, you know, it's something that I keep doing, and I think eventually people are starting to catch on. Like you say, people are asking for shorter amounts of time and, you know, wanting to get them done in one day, and they got to realize there's got to be a happy medium for everybody, you know, to make those things happen.
I've got another question, a little bit of a change, but it concerns the flexibility of the tournament structure. I've been in tournaments where, and I'm just going to pick out a number, say they were paying the top 80, and there's 84 people left, and it's about to end for the night, and four people don't want to come back to play, you know, for 20 minutes or half an hour the next day and not get paid. How do you handle something like that?
Big pet peeve of mine. I mean, I've seen it happen in many places. You know, it happened in the Venetian. We were down to 20 players. They were paying 18, and, you know, it was pretty obvious that we were going to be in the money shortly, and they didn't let us play it. You know, some complaints about that at the World Series this year as well. But, you know, I think, you know, them sticking to their guns and saying that you got to come back, it's their prerogative to do so. Again, there is staffing issues and things like that that they have to deal with. But, you know, I never like that. If you're close to the money, I'm going to let you play to it.
I think it's about selling hotel rooms for another night.
Yeah, we hear that argument also with the main event being so long. But I don't know if that's the case or not.
Matt Savage is our guest here at the final table. As I mentioned, he is the new executive director of the World Poker Tour, took over in that capacity this summer. And the WPT new season is already underway, and you've made changes. When are we going to start seeing these on TV? I know you've signed a new deal with Fox Sports to air on nationally on cable on Sunday nights. When do we start seeing those programs? And tell us about some of the changes.
You're going to be seeing them in the first show of season number 9. We are
which is when? When is that, Matt?
We do not have an exact date yet, but it'll be out soon. It'll be on the website,
okay.
WorldPokerTour.com. There's a lot of changes. You know, we brought back Kimberly Lansing, who was a real favorite of the players, and she's a new anchor of the show. We have a new person on the thing. It's kind of a critic type thing. It's called The Raw Deal. We're excited about the Royal Flush Girls, and you know, one of the biggest things that we're doing is we're covering all the action starting on day number one of all the events. Mike and Vince are making their way out to all the tournaments as well, so really trying to put a lot of the event back in the event.
So we're not just going to see the final six playing in that arena.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, we are definitely going to be showing more storylines, and it's going to have a completely different look. The show is going to be, I think, a lot better than it has been in the past.
And I know that you were talking about having a critic on the show. You actually did some online auditions and that sort of stuff. Who did you actually hire to do that?
It's a human. That's what they're telling me to say right now. they're not giving out any information. We're pretty close to signing the deal with that person.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's a player that's everybody knows, and I think it's going to be exciting. exciting news.
Dennis, okay, wait, is it you, Dennis? You're not doing it, are you?
No, I'm not, but I want to finish up the line. It's a human as opposed to a...
I guess a donkey.
Well, some humans are donkeys in the poker world, man.
Exactly.
All right, so we'll look forward to that. And while we have you here, I want to impose upon you to ask your opinion, and you probably have been asked about this before, about what is now kind of an infamous TV hand from the World Series of Poker a couple of weeks ago with Prahlad Friedman and this amateur named Ted Bort, and the clock gets called. Bort calls the clock on Friedman, who has the floor guy count all the way down to one. Then Prahlad says call, and then the floor guy says it's dead. We talked about it at length on last week's show. I'm sure you've talked about it, but give us your take on the decision there that at one, not zero, but at one, Prahlad's hand was dead.
Yeah, I've been interviewed about it a couple times, and I know Jack Effel pretty well, and you know he's defending his floor person, as I've done in the past, and I think he truly believes that the clock should end at zero. But I think it goes even beyond that. You know, I announce 3-2-1, and then I'll start saying your hand is dead, and it is not dead until I say the word dead, in my opinion. And if it's very close, I'm going to give it to the person that's calling the pot. Calling the clock is simply a tool for us and players to speed up the game and keep the structures good for you. It's not necessarily, you know, there's no stopwatch that's, you know, exactly at zero it's going to be a dead hand. So it's a lot of that has to come on the floorman's hands, what decision they want to make. And because of that, you know, I think if you wait till the last second, you're really at the mercy of the tournament director. So if you don't make that decision, you know, it's, you know, you could lose that hand. That being said, I don't think that Prahlad had the best hand. He said that he had two pair, nines and fives. I think he would have argued vehemently if he had the best hand. And I don't think that he pulled an angle by mucking his hand. I think that, you know, there's not a player out there, I don't think. You know, people say that they would have turned their cards over and said, no, I said call. But I don't believe that. I mean, it's the main event. Pressure's high, and I think you just do, you know, what you think is best for you in that situation, and I don't think that he really pulled a shot.
Yeah, we actually talked about that last week, and again, it's not his position to try to clarify and say, oh, no, you know, I'm out of the tournament and turn your cards over. Sorry, that's just not going to happen. I can't imagine too many players doing that.
Maybe in somebody's basement, not in the main event.
Yeah, so there you go.
Yeah,
exactly.
Now, we also commented, and I was kind of questioning, should that floorman have talked to the dealer? Should he have, or should the dealer have spoken up, or should there have been any other interaction there?
Well, I do think that, you know, the dealer saying call before he mucked his hand should have gone into play. I really wish they would have held his cards out and said, wait a minute, what happened here? I heard you say that on the show last week. That was a very good point, Dennis, that he should have stopped and said, you know, figured out what the situation was. He could have gone to the dealer. He could have gone to the other players. He could have even gone to Prahlad. I think Prahlad at that point, had that situation come up, would have said, yes, I did say call.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, would have been a totally different situation. That being said, you know, there is a lot of pressure there for that floor person. There's a, you know, it's the biggest tournament in the world. There's a lot of noise. You got barking going on at the same time. You know, I can kind of understand how he missed it. You know, and it's one of those situations where if we had video camera on everybody, we could go to the tape, but we don't. So I think it's just move on, and you know, I'm still hearing a lot about it, but I think it'll die out.
Well, like you, we have an enormous amount of respect for Jack Effel, the tournament director of the World Series of Poker, who, by the way, tweeted just a couple of days ago, thanks to everybody for the feedback. We're pleased the Friedman versus Bort hand was captured on video, and we'll use it to analyze procedures and rules for 2011. As is our standard operating procedure, we will continue to tweak rules, staff, and processes to ensure the WSOP remains the gold standard for live poker tournaments.
Yeah, so, I kind of gave him a shot back. I said, for the gold standard, use Jack Effels, but for the platinum standard, go with Matt. We jab each other quite often.
Well, Matt, we thank you for your time today, and in return, we want to give you a chance to plug for our listeners in California who might be near Commerce the events you still have going on this week.
Yeah, I mean, our main event's coming up this weekend. It's a $2,000 buy-in. We also have our exciting Ironman event with 10,000 added coming up. You know, it's no breaks allowed, and play pretty much 24 hours without a break. It's a fun event. Come out and play it. It's going to be good. Today we have our knockout bounty tournament with $500 bounties, a $1,500 tournament where everybody you knock out, you get $500. So some exciting events coming up this week.
Yeah. By the way, one thing that makes that that Ironman tournament worthwhile for everybody is you're going to continue to feed them, and that Commerce food is great. So, you know,
yeah, they get three meals at the table. So, yeah, come on out.
I've actually done that. I've actually done that when I stayed and played at Commerce without being in the Ironman tournament.
Yeah, without the 10,000 ads. Exactly. Yeah,
bring the coffee pot up next to them and see what happens, right. Huh?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like I said, I know you've got an event starting in just about 40 minutes, so we appreciate your time today. And when we post the podcast to this, we'll tweet about it so that you can retweet about it.
Yeah, great. I appreciate that. And guys, I do want to throw out one final thing. You know, members of the poker community, Chip and Karina, have lost their son. He drowned a few days ago and passed away early this morning. So I want to throw out my condolences there. And, you know,
absolutely.
Very sad story. I have a son the same age. And, you know, please pass out your condolences to those, Chip and Karina.
Yeah, that's Chip Jett and Karina Jett, two terrific people, two poker pros. Beloved in the poker community, and very, very sad news. Thanks for sharing that with us, Matt. We appreciate
it.
We'll talk to you soon. Matt Savage, tournament director at the Commerce Casino. We've had some comments about them recently on the show. No disrespect intended to Matt for any of that. We have tremendous respect for him. He also runs tournaments at Bay 101, the Hard Rock in Las Vegas. And as I mentioned, the new executive director of the World Poker Tour.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just goes to show that poker is growing again. The WPT is going to be probably bigger and better than ever, just like everything else.
I think it's a great move to not just show the six people at the final table. Because the one complaint that I've heard for the last couple of years about the WPT, as other poker shows have come along, like Poker After Dark and High Stakes Poker and now The Big Game, is I don't know if I'm watching a new show or not when I put on a regular WPT telecast. It's always six guys in that arena, and I'm pretty sure that I've seen somebody named Fan or Twan or Helmuth or Mattisau or whoever it is, and I don't know if it's a new one or not. This new format, I think, may pump some life back into them, and that's a good thing.
But you're going to have the same problem you have all along. That means that's less hands you're going to be able to show of the final table.
Yeah.
So, I mean, no matter what, there's a trade-off. Now, which way is the best way, I don't know. Maybe we're still trying to find the right formula.
You're worried that it might turn into even more of a shove fest on TV?
Well, yeah. Are they only going to show the hands that somebody, you know, gets the magical card on the river? Or are they only going to show, you know, the hands where people go out on?
Yeah.
Not the great hands, not the hands that actual poker is played.
Well, if we get to see some from earlier on in the tournament and that, and then we get a good mixture, we'll have to see.
But it's still always, I think they're still trying to find the right mixture, because everybody always has a complaint, no matter how you do it.
Yep.
And a lot of them complain about the World Series main event. Well, they don't show enough hands at the final table.
By the way, if you think I'm joking about the names of the WPT.
I know you're not.
This was not on TV, but at one of these tournaments that Matt has been running at the Commerce, event number 7, the top four finishers all had the last name Wynn. Like Scotty Wynn. Scotty was one of them, but all four of the last four players were named Wynn. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, a guy who doesn't have that name, Jonathan Duhamel, who is the chip leader of the main event of the World Series of Poker. He's the leader of the November 9. He'll join us in just a couple of minutes. And like Dennis, he is a pro who is sponsored by PokerStars.net.
Absolutely. And if you go to play, you've got to go to PokerStars.net. It's unbelievable, the stuff that's going on there now. We've talked beforehand about the W Coupe that's going on right now. It's going to continue on for another week. Massive amounts, $50 million in guarantees, tournaments at all sorts of levels, tournaments of all sorts of games. But the new thing they've come out with now is they've got a new promotion going. They are going to be hitting the magical number, 50 billion hands here in the next couple of weeks.
Here's what's stunning about this. This past weekend was the 9th anniversary of PokerStars.
Correct.
It's only been around for 9 years. And when
Correct.
It started out, it was a free poker site.
Yes.
And then, of course, has changed considerably since then, worldwide. They hit their 40 billionth hand in February of this year.
Yeah.
So in 7 months, they've dealt another 10 billion hands.
I don't think people realize that there now are over 37 million subscribers to PokerStars.
Mm-hmm.
37 million.
Making them the world's biggest online poker site.
By far. There's nobody even close to them anymore. It's huge. And by the way, on that 50th billion promotion, they have a whole series of promotions leading up to it. You know, every millionth hand, as they're getting closer to it, somebody that's playing there is going to win some extra money, some bonus money that they're throwing in.
Nice.
So you go online, download the information, start playing. You could get a lot of very nice prizes.
Yeah, all right. Find the Poker Star in you on PokerStars.net. He's Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips. I am Paul Harris. This is The Final Table. Our podcasts are available via iTunes or on thechipleader.com, and we're live every Tuesday at 3 on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And here at Harrah's, they're playing poker tournaments twice a day, 7 days a week, ranging from $40 and $60 buy-ins up to a buck and a quarter and $160. And this Saturday, the 18th, will be their monthly $310 buy-in. That's every third Saturday of the month at 2 o'clock. Terrific event that I've played in quite a few times. Final tabled a few. Ended up chopping a couple of times. And
cool.
It's a very well-run event. It is a deep stack event. And, you know, we were talking with Matt Savage in the last segment about deep stack events and structures and all that sort of stuff. I very much like the structure of this, because not only do you get lots of play, but it's not all at the beginning. You get lots of play towards the end as well. In fact, one of them I played with our friend Joe Galloway a couple of months ago. We started the final table at 6 o'clock, and I got knocked out in fourth place at 9 o'clock. Took 3 hours to eliminate six or seven people from the table. So that means you're getting a lot of play at both ends of the tournament and in the middle as well. So that's one of the many tournaments, 14 a week, every week. For details, go to harrahsstlouis.com. That's harrahsstlouis.com. You can also find out about the restaurants here. Sammy's Beach Bar has a new happy hour and new specials. Charlie Gito's, a great Italian place. They've got the Range Steakhouse. They've got the Eat Up Buffet. Lots of stuff to choose from when you come here to Harrah's St. Louis, the home of the final table every Tuesday.
Yeah, and I do like the way they run the structure here. And it's the same thing we were talking about with Matt, sort of. They've been running them here for years now, and they've got it down to an art.
Yep.
They've run into problems just like every other casino did, maybe running too late, maybe some complaints. They've modified them. They've adjusted them. They fit it to fit the players, and you very rarely hear complaints here now.
I agree. Mike, do we have Jonathan on the phone? Okay, we're waiting to get Jonathan Duhamel, the chip leader, on with us here in just a couple of minutes. Last week we had Joe Stapleton, the co-host of The Big Game, on with us. He wrote me an email this morning saying, I'd like you to help me by putting out a correction.
Uh-oh.
He said, Barry Greenstein pointed out to me that on last week's show, I mistakenly credited Linda Johnson with the creation of Card Player magazine.
Because we,
we were talking about potential Hall of Fame
nominees.
Couldn't think of the word nominee for a second there. and we went through the 10 that are on there, and Linda Johnson, the first lady of poker, is on there. So Joe wants me to point out that Linda was an integral part of Card Player's position in the poker world, owned the magazine for 8 years before selling it to Barry Shulman, but June Field was the original founder of Card Player magazine.
Okay.
So just want to get that correction in.
Excellent.
Okay, now let's bring in the man who's in the position you were in 2 years ago at the main event of the World Series of Poker, the chip leader of this year's November 9, Jonathan Duhamel. Hi, Jonathan. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great myself. Hey, congratulations. I wanted to talk to you about it. That's just awesome. $65 million? Has it sunk in yet?
Yeah, it's crazy. I know it's crazy. I mean, it's an amazing feeling being the chip leader going there.
You know, Jonathan, we've got you in a bad cell somewhere or something, and your cell phone is cutting out. So whatever room you're in, walk to another room or something, and maybe we can get a better signal on you there. 2 years ago, Dennis went to the final table. That we lost him completely. 2 years ago, Dennis, you went to the final table as the chip leader and ended up coming in third. Last year, Darvin Moon went to the final table and ended up coming in second. Tell us about a little bit, before we talk to Jonathan and get him back on the phone here, tell us a little bit about your experience being at that final table with that that 10-player situation, before you even got to the final table, when you were at 10 players and getting down to 9, because one of the things we have to ask Jonathan about is how he played that bubble. So tell us what you did when you were in that situation.
Well, it's interesting when you're sitting down there, because you don't know for sure how the players, they've had, in my case, 117 days to change their strategy, to change their play, to clean up their game, to do a tremendous amount of things.
But even before you got there, when you were still there in July and you were at 10, you hadn't made the November 9 yet, you still had the big stack at the table. How did you exploit that opportunity?
Oh, I had fun, let me tell you. If you remember, and I don't know how much of it was shown on TV, I lost a monster hand to Scott Montgomery. And it didn't bother me a bit because I was so full of confidence and so in control of that final table, I knew he'd give me the chips back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost comical that way. And now I look back on it, somebody should have kicked my butt a little bit is what they should have done. But I was so full of confidence and so sure that I had this table under control, that it didn't even bother me a bit. I actually paid him off in the river because I just figured I'd get it back. And that dropped me to third place. And within a level, I was back up to chip leader again.
Well,
so.
Jonathan was the chip leader, and I think we have him back on the phone. Jonathan, are you back?
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. Excuse me, guys.
That's
no
okay.
Problem.
All right, so we're talking about playing that November 9 bubble, and we've asked some of the other people who are going to be with you at the final table in 2 months how they played it. You, from what I understand, exploited that situation tremendously.
I've got to ask you, because I mean, I haven't seen the play on ESPN yet or anything, but I've talked to other people that were watching you and heard from other people. Now, did you just literally go after everybody's chips, or did you get hit by the deck, or what happened there? Because you chipped up tremendously. I love it.
To be honest, what was funny about it is that I was really carded at that time. It's just that at some point, and that bubble, it's like 2 a.m., I realized, like, all those players, they want to make it to November 9. They want, because,
yep,
like, this is kind of a big bubble, you know, and they just want to make it to the final table. So when I realized that, I said to myself, oh, my, I got to start raising some hands. I got to abuse from the chip lead I had. You know, my chip lead was not that big at that time, but I was still the chip leader. So I got to abuse from that. So I just started raising, like, every hand I got and tribetting every hand I got, no matter what hand I had, because I knew that I'm going to put them in a tough spot all the time.
I love it.
So basically, I was still carded, you know, but it just, I felt like the situation was just so perfect for me to raise, like, I don't know, 75 or 80% of the hands I had.
Now, did you remember you have to look at the cards before you raise?
Yeah, no. Well, I was looking at them. It's just like, okay, whatever, like ace, deuce, or jack three, or whatever. It's like all the same thing in that situation, in that particular situation.
And and did the other players, when you would three bet them light, would they almost always fold, which would just make you do it more?
Yes, because they knew that, because I was a chip leader, I mean, I was not afraid to gamble with them. And for them, making, like, the top 9 was so important. Like, it's so a big step, like, money-wise it is, but with all, you know, the bowl, the sponsorship and ESPN, all those things, it's so important to make the final table that they would be folding, like, maybe, like, pocket jacks or pocket queens and stuff like that. So I knew that I can just raise any hand I have anyways, and they're going to be folding no matter what they have. So.
Now, I found out that I had to be a little careful with the short stacks in that kind of a philosophy. The middle stacks, because you were one of the few people that could actually take them out, that they were in danger of being eliminated, were really, really hesitant to play a hand against you. But the short stacks, if they caught something, you know, they had to play poker. So you had to be a little careful, maybe the guy in 8th, 9th, 10th or something like that.
I agree with you. Like, the very short stack was the one I didn't want to mess with them too much. But the one, like, I don't know, like 4th or 5th or 6th in chip, them, they were like the ones in the, like, the toughest spot, like you said. I mean, because of they don't want to bust if they're a 5th in chip. They want to make it to the final table. So because of that, they're just going to be folding every hand they had. So it's just like a situation that does not happen a lot of time. But because it was the, you know, the November 9 bubble, it was a special situation. But I think you got to adjust your play because of that. And that's what I tried to did by raising, like, all the hand I had.
What I think will be interesting is when these things do finally air on ESPN and your opponents see that you were three-betting them with air, they're going to think that this is really how you play. And maybe that perception will help you in November, Jonathan.
Yeah, but I played with them before that, and like before being 10-handed, and, you know, I was just playing, I don't know, kind of a normal game. But then I think they knew what I was doing. But even if they know it, even they, if they realize it, they can't do much about it because, I mean, it's their chips, it's their stack. So even if they know what I'm doing, they're still in the same tough spot. They can't do anything. So probably they're going to see it on ESPN, but they already knew it anyways. So this is going to be a funny situation now. How it's going to turn on the final table. It's going to be a lot different, I think. Yeah. It's going to be fun to see, like, how people react to that and who adjusts to that and who doesn't adjust to that.
Yeah, I love it because everybody in their own mind thinks, well, you know, you raised it with Jack 3, then you raised it with Ace Deuce. But the time that I come back at you, you know, pop you back after you make your raise, that's the time you're going to have the kings. That's what they think in their hand.
Sometimes everybody has hands. So sometimes I'll have aces or kings because everybody got them. So it's just a matter of situation and picking your spots well, I think.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, we had your fellow countryman Matt Jarvis on the show a few weeks ago. You two are kind of battling it out to be the first ever Canadian winner of the World Series of Poker main event. He's from British Columbia. You're from the Montreal area. Is there a cross-Canada battle between you?
I don't think there's a battle. I mean, honestly, if I don't win it, I hope he wins it, because I really hope a Canadian would win this tournament. But I played with Matthew, I think, during 2 days, and he's a very good player. I mean, he's very aggressive. He picks the spot well. Every time he's in a hand, I mean, we never know what's going on in his head. So he's a very good player, and I hope if I don't win, I hope he wins it, yeah.
But at every November 9th so far, one of the things they always comment, they did with me, they did with Darvin Moon, and I'm sure they're going to be talking about you. You go in it as the chip leader. What happens if you go out in ninth or eighth or even seventh? You know that's going to be written up. Does that stick in the back of your mind? Do you worry a little bit? Are you going to try to sit back a little bit?
To be honest, I try not to think about it. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. There's going to be the card speaking. So, you know, maybe I'll finish ninth. Maybe I'll win. I have no idea. But then it just what I want to do is go there and play the best poker I can. I mean, no matter what situation happens, I'm just going to try to make the right decision, play the best I can, and then from there, you know, I'm going to control what I can control. And what I can control, well, we'll see what happens, I guess.
Jonathan, we mentioned, you know, Dennis was the chip leader 2 years ago. Darvin Moon was the chip leader last year. You're the chip leader this year. You actually played at Foxwoods in one of the Megastacks events that Bernard Lee puts on there just a couple of weeks ago. You and I believe Chris Moneymaker was there as well, right?
Yeah, Chris Moneymaker was there, and Darvin Moon was also there.
So did you talk to Darvin about chip leader play?
Yeah, we talk a lot. And honestly, Darvin's a very sweet guy. He helped me a lot with the strategy, you know, going there. You know, because being the chip leader, for sure, you got to have a different strategy than being there as a low stack or something like that. So he helped me. We talk a lot in Foxwood, and he's a very nice guy.
Yeah, he is. Darvin and I talked a number of times in between July and when he went back to the November 9 about everything from the media pressure, about how to play it, about a lot of different things.
So you passed on your wisdom to Darvin, and Darvin passed it on to Jonathan.
Well, I don't know if it's wisdom that I passed on to him. I mean, I you know. Sometimes I wonder, you know, if there is any wisdom in this game. But you know, it's fun.
Jonathan, tell us about your game. We know you started playing this before you had even graduated high school. You were playing online, and you're only 22 years old, which means you've just been able to start playing live poker, and you've played in a few tournaments over the last year and cashed in a few. Do you prefer playing live events, or are you a guy who sits home and plays on PokerStars all the time?
I think if you want, like, for me, I play, like, all the time on PokerStars because this is, like, the online play, this is the game I play all the time. But I think it's fun to play live sometimes because it's quite different. I mean, you see the people, you can talk with the people. It's a lot different experience. But when you play online, the thing is, there are so many tables running, there are so many tournaments all the time starting, so that you can play, like, a lot of tables at the same time. And also, you can play, like, whatever the limits you want. If you want to play a $1 tournament or a $1,000 tournament, they have everything. So that's what I like about the online play on PokerStars there. But I mean, the fact to be playing live and to see the people and see their faces and stuff, this is for sure a different experience. And I think it's fun to mix the two, like having just a good balance between your online and your live play. I think it's like the perfect balance.
And does it change your strategy?
Yeah, I think it's maybe a little bit different because the live and online players doesn't play like the. doesn't play the same way all the time. But again, it's just to adjust to the players. You got to know your players, know who you're playing against, if this guy is aggressive, if he's passive and stuff like that. So either it's online or live, it's kind of the same thing. You just know your opponents and play regardless. You play like depending what your opponent is. So.
Okay. Yeah, and I agree with you. There is a big difference. It's fun to be able to identify the guys when you go down to a PCA or something like that that have never really played much in live. You know, the ones that forget to, you know, cover their cards or anything like that, because that can make it fun too. Got a question for you. While you were doing this through all the different days out there, how was your chip stack as it progressed at the end of day one, at the end of day two? Were you in the middle of the pack? Did you take off to an early lead? Where were you during the course of this 7-8 days?
The day one, I had a very tough table. It was like all online players. It was very, very, very tough. So my stack like stayed pretty much the same all day long. And then on day two and day three, it was pretty good, though. There I got not the chip lead, but I had a good stack, like over the average. And then on day four, it started like doing very big, bad roller coasters. That was just a crazy day for me on the bubble. I was like up big time and then down big time and then up big time. So it was like a big, big roller coaster. And then I'd say from starting maybe on the end of day five or the start of day six, there I got a good amount of chips. I was over the average. And from there, I never went like below the average. I still stayed over it. But I'd never been like the chip leader of the tournament, I think. I was just like trying to grind it out like just 100 at a time. And that went pretty well, actually, on day six and day seven.
Yeah.
Got one last question for you here. Was there any particular hand that, I'll do it several different ways, either that you wish you to play different, or maybe a monster hand that you laid down just to make sure you did progress and keep that chip lead?
Well, on the beginning of day eight, I had a big hand with I doubled up with like a 4-5 suited that I think I played like kind of tricky, but I think I played pretty well. I re-raised it from the small blind when the guy opened and raised from the dealer, and then ended up having a straight and doubling up with that. And then obviously there's the big hand on day eight with Matt Halfleck that everyone talks about that had two jacks and he had two aces.
Yeah.
And again, I ended up with a straight. I think I probably should have played a little different. But there again, I got lucky, and because of that, I almost doubled my chip stack. But honestly, I'm not sure. Like the way I played that hand, the pocket jacks hand, I mean, maybe just my pre-flop decision was bad. But then when I decided to play that way and to 4-bet in, I think I had to play it the way I played it. So.
Well, Jonathan, we appreciate you coming on the show today. Congratulations on your two caches and other events this summer at the series. Good luck when you get back to the Rio for the November 9 this fall, and good luck with the Canadian battle between you and Matt Jarvis, too.
Okay, well, thank you, guys. I appreciate a lot. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, what we ought to do sometimes is get you, me, and Darvin together and sitting at a table. That could be interesting.
Yeah, I'm in.
Battle of the chip leaders. You know, we could host it right here.
There you go.
Right here at Harrah's St. Louis. Jonathan, thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys.
Right,
Jonathan Duhamel, 65.975 million chips. He'll be in seat four as the chip leader of the main event, Final Table, the November 9 on ESPN. And we'll, of course, have coverage of that for you here on the Final Table. We take a break and come back with more with PokerStars Pro Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harrah on 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Dennis Phillips has flown over 100,000 miles this year to play poker tournaments on three continents. But he always comes back to St. Louis to talk about the game. Here he is at the Final Table with Paul Harrah from Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And let's talk about where you have been recently, because you have been traveling. You mentioned at the beginning of the show that you were at Foxwoods this weekend, but I know you also played in a couple of charity events in New England.
I did. I played in the only card room in the entire state of Massachusetts. And it's kind of unique up there in the fact it's like a 20-table card room. They got the permission of the Attorney General to set this up. They've been trying for almost 2 years now to get casinos legal and to allow them to come into the state.
Yeah.
There's arguments back and forth. There's a power struggle going on. Do we have three licenses? Do we have two? Who gets a license? Where are they located?
Will they be on Indian reservations
exactly,
or not?
Exactly. You know, the whole bit.
Yeah.
So everybody's fighting it out, and so nobody's getting anything.
Yep.
Well, a couple of brothers up there decided to try and get something going at least, and they approached the Attorney General, and they went through the laws. There's not been a law about gaming written since 1945 in the entire state.
Mm-hmm.
So they.
By the way, online poker in 1945 really sucked.
I'm guessing there wasn't a whole lot of competition.
Yeah, it was on an Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah, so. Well, you could probably wait a long time to get a full table. So, anyhow, what they've came up and the way they're doing this, which is kind of unique, but they have the blessing of the local chief of police. They have a blessing around there. Every night, they pick a charity. Some place that they can contribute to, and a part of the rake, part of the house take then goes to that.
Wow.
So they're putting together playgrounds for kids. They're raising funds for the benevolent fund there for a wide variety of different
fire
things.
Department. Or
fire department, whatever it happens
teachers,
to be.
Whatever.
And people are actually lining up trying to get on the list here to have their night. And they will end up getting, you know, 60, 80, 100 people there over the weekends, and they'll show up there, and they'll play the cards, and they'll have fun,
now
and they'll raise
second.
Money for
if
it.
If I go there and I play, these are cash games.
These are cash
about.
Games.
So do I get to play for real money and get
yes,
to keep
do.
My winnings?
Yes, you do. Part of the rake, part of the house take is what's going to the charity.
Okay.
And that's how they're bypassing the laws that are on the book.
Does that mean that there's a bigger rake? For instance, most casinos would take $4, up to $4 out of a pot, 5 yeah. or 10% up to $4 out of the pot. Are they taking $5, $6? And
they're taking about $8, I think. I'm not for sure the amount, but they
Ooh.
Do take more out.
Wow.
But that's only in the bigger pots, obviously. It's a percentage up till then.
Yep.
But they do take more out. But you know, if you're sitting down there, that other money is not going in somebody's pocket.
Mm-hmm.
It's going down there to buy a swing, or it's going over here to, you know, buy equipment for the firefighters.
Well,
or something.
I got to tell you, that's all well and good, and I'm a big supporter of all those sort of
yep.
things and those sort of charities. But I'm guessing in a room like this, they're playing low-limit poker. It may be $2 and $4 limit poker, or maybe $3, $6, and yeah. probably nothing more than $1, $2, no limit. Am I about right?
You're about right, but almost every game in there was a no limit.
It is very hard to beat an $8 a pot rake.
Now, again, that's one of the things on poker. You go there for the camaraderie. You go there for the fun. It's like going to a bingo night. You're not going there to go home with a pocket full of money.
Okay.
If it happens, that's cool. But you go there for the fun, for the pleasure, and everything.
Well, you know what? It would be great if they set something up so that those charities got some money, but that poker was legal and there
oh,
were
absolutely.
Poker rooms all around the state, and we didn't have to put up with any of this nonsense where you got to jump through these hoops just to be able to play the game.
100% agree with that. But it is nice the way they've gone around this. It is nice how they're having the support from the local police department and the rest of them and from the attorney general, how they're trying to find some way to let people enjoy this game. And now the way they're doing it is they're actually benefiting some groups there.
Okay.
So it may be not the greatest solution, but it may be the best of anything they can do right now.
Okay.
And I went up there, and we played. We played for the local funds up there. First time they'd actually brought in a, quote, pro. I still wonder when I became the pro. I'm not for sure of that, but
yeah.
whatever the heck.
I'm going to go with 2 years ago.
Okay, well. whatever it happens to be.
2 years ago yeah. come November.
Yeah. So. But these guys, they're a great bunch of guys. We had a lot of fun. We threw a little tournament. Part of the money from the tournament then went to the charity.
Mm-hmm.
We had a blast. You know, they've invited me to come back up there. It's not that far from, like, Foxwoods and the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who knows? We'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, and you did another charity while you were up there?
We did it with the Eastern Poker Tour, the EPT out there, which I was shocked at how huge this thing is.
Not to be confused with the European
Correct.
Poker Tour, which you're going to in London in a couple of weeks.
Correct. Correct. But this one is basically a pub tour where guys can go into the local pub and pay their $10 or $15 and sit down and have fun and play and maybe get a meal put on, and prizes are put up by the local establishment, maybe
mm-hmm.
some local merchants around there.
Mm-hmm.
And they go and they have fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like a bowling night or a whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But or even a card game that you used to have in your garage, they're now having it there where
right.
you can watch the TV on the big screen and a football game and the rest of it.
And the bars look at it as a way to bring people in, you know, just
sure.
like putting Monday Night Football up on the big screen. This is, you know, if we can get 50 or 80 guys coming in here and playing poker and drinking beer and ordering wings.
There you go.
It's a win-win for them.
It is. It's a great way to do it, and I had no idea how large. In fact, they're actually holding some bigger tournaments then. You can play in these smaller ones, and you qualify, and you go up the steps and get to the bigger ones. Mm-hmm. They're actually broadcasting them on Comcast now. Some major prizes. There's like a $30,000 prize that they put together for this.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty awesome. I think they said, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere like 17 or 18,000 members up there now.
Wow.
Scattered around New England.
Nice.
Yeah, it's very huge.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
Now, was one of those tied in with 9/11, which was this the
Correct.
Anniversary was this weekend?
Correct. I got to do the shuffle up and deal there. We were doing it for the Millburn Fire Department and for 9/11, and we had a guaranteed $10,000 that we were going to raise for the funding there.
Nice.
And we did. So these guys came in. There were veterans. There were all sorts of people there. Like I said, I got the privilege of actually standing up there and doing the shuffle up and deal. And believe me, all I could talk about was the 9/11 and the honor that should go to those guys, because I still just feel that in my heart. And we sat down and we played cards and we had fun and we raised money. And I'm trying to see the downside of this.
There's no downside at all. Nice going.
Other than I lost, but you know,
well,
that's okay.
Yeah, but nice going for them to put together an event like this, and it was great that you could be there.
Yeah.
Where are you off to next?
Well,
besides the ball game tonight, where you and Albert are going to hang out at home plate.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I get to see Albert for a couple of minutes. I think he has a job to do tonight, though.
Yeah.
You know, let's hope he reverts back to two games ago, and not last night where he hit the two home runs. But actually, we're heading down to Argentina. To the grand finale of the LAPT down there, the Latin American Poker Tour. That'll be in Argentina.
This is your third or fourth trip down there, isn't it?
Try seventh or eighth.
Wow.
Yeah. This is the third time that I've been to Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
Besides Chile, Uruguay, Peru, all the rest of them down there. So, yeah, that'll be good. And then we go from there straight over to London and play in the EPT.
Mm-hmm. Now, the World Series of Poker Europe started today. You
Correct.
Opted not to play in that because you're going to be doing Argentina.
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct. You know what's so nice now? There is so much poker going on around the world. You have to pick and choose.
Yeah.
Because if you wanted to, you could play poker every weekend of the year somewhere.
I think there's an
Absolutely.
WPT event going on at Borgata this week at the same time.
So. I don't doubt it. I actually didn't know that. But
yeah.
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Not only is there just trying to find a tournament, now you have to eliminate two or three others that you might want to play because it's getting so popular.
Right.
I wonder sometime. In the U.S., or don't even think about the world, in the U.S. alone, over a weekend with all the different tournaments, how many millions of people are playing Texas Hold'em, or
mm-hmm.
playing tournaments?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a phenomenal number. Yeah, I have no clue. There you go. That's a project somebody ought to do sometime and figure it out.
Speaking of tournaments, the main event will return to ESPN tonight, 8 to 10 Central Time. In hour two of tonight, they hit the money bubble.
Yep.
And then they're off and running. And, you know, we kind of know who ends up winning this. We haven't seen any of these guys except the grinder so far. We haven't seen Jonathan Duhamel or any of the other players that we've had on the show from the November 9, but you're going to start seeing them over the next couple of weeks. And it's always interesting when my wife walks into the room and one of those people is involved in a hand and they may be behind in the hand, and I say, well, he's going to win this hand. How do you know? Because I know. I know the future, honey. That's how I know.
But that's what's so great about this WSOP, the main event there, is that you're going to have a final table, and every year it's nine people out of that 7,000, and it's a nine different almost every year, and it's the unknown and the storylines and the different things going on there.
Yeah.
It's awesome. It makes for great TV, I think.
Just hope there's no barking tonight. I'm sick of that guy. Also, speaking of TV poker, the Poker Stars $1 Million Challenge returns this
yep.
Sunday. They did this last year on Fox TV on weeks that the Fox Television Network did not have an NFL doubleheader. This week, the local station here in St. Louis will be carrying the 3 o'clock game because the Rams are playing Oakland, which will be on earlier on the CBS station, and so they can't have a game on Fox against that. So we're getting the Poker Stars $1 Million Challenge at 2 o'clock here. But in other parts of the country, it will replace the second game, and Daniel Negreanu will be on there again, and we'll see how that goes. The PPA, one of the sponsors of this show, and we're proud members of the Poker Players Alliance, Congress is back in session.
Yes.
Which means that they are hopefully going to be talking again about not only H.R. 2267, which is the bill that passed Barney Frank's House Financial Services Committee by a 41-22 vote earlier this summer, but also perhaps the House Ways and Means Committee will take up H.R. 2268, which is the companion bill, and maybe we can get these things going over the course of the next out and leave Congress to try to get reelected.
Absolutely. I'm not for sure if it will happen or not, but we have a shot here. We also have the lame duck session where after the election and before the new group takes over in January. So we've got a couple of different places here that are possible that we can actually get something done. And this is the first time in a number of years that we have an option actually to get something done.
And as I pointed out many times, we not only need to change it in Congress, but we need to change it in states as well, all of what we just talked about in Massachusetts. Listen to this from Portsmouth, Virginia.
Oh, I don't even know if I want to hear this.
Poker halls there have been shut down by the Commonwealth's attorney, Earl Mobley, who had previously said he wouldn't prosecute the poker rooms there, but has since reversed his stance, saying he doesn't want Portsmouth to become a gambling center. One of the poker halls affected was the Poker Palace owned by Charlie Daniels. Charlie Daniels petitioned the court last week to resume the games at his hall. He had tournaments and cash games going on there, and he says he has raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for charities through these tournaments and should be allowed to stay open, just like the room in Massachusetts. They're now battling it out with the Commonwealth's attorney there and trying to convince the legislators in Richmond to make it legal in that state as well, as they have just south of there in Florida. So there's yet another battle that the PPA is fighting for all of us.
If you go state by state all the way around, the changes that have happened in Philadelphia, the changes that have happened in Florida, the changes that will be happening in a couple of other states, it's unbelievable, but thank goodness they're bringing the fight forward, shall we say.
And last story today, 52-year-old Mesbah Kafaji should never be allowed to play poker live again after spitting in the face of a dealer at the Bicycle Casino in Los Angeles. As far as I'm concerned, you don't just get thrown out. You should get arrested, because that's assault, and never be allowed back in.
Yeah, that's a little ridiculous.
You know, the dealer may give you a bad beat, but you got to give him a little bit more respect than that.
He doesn't stack the deck, guys. He really doesn't.
If he could, he'd be working with somebody at the table.
He'd be at the other side of the table.
Exactly. That's all the time we have for today. Our podcasts are on thechipleader.com and available through iTunes, and we're here every week, Tuesdays at 3, with the final table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.